I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And if you were thinking you were going to hear from Newell Norman, you're going to have to wait till Monday. Newell's off today. I'm filling in, and we'll be doing that occasionally, and good to get back in here. And well, want to welcome in some special guests that are joining us now. Patricia Pennell of Got You Covered HR Consulting Firm. Patricia, thanks for coming in. Also, Sydney Lewis, who is with the Jones Walker Law Firm, specializing in labor law. And we're going to talk about sexual harassment on the job in the workplace, something that is being buzzed about all across the country in the wake of the Weinstein issue on a local level here, which has become national, is the John Besh incident that has been taking place. And maybe we can all get a little bit better educated in it. And if you're a business owner, maybe you can get some tips on how you can avoid these problems. And if you have witnessed sexual harassment, if you've either been a victim or you've seen it or witnessed it in your company, we'd love to hear from you and let our guest comment on it. And we do ask that you please keep the name of the company, the corporation, anonymously, and just tell us the details of the situation. Sydney, I want to start with you. Jones Walker Law Firm, you do various types of law representation, but labor law, how long have you been involved in these issues like this that would involve sexual harassment?
Since 1985. When I graduated from law school, I went right into labor law.
And if you would, Patricia, tell us about Got You Covered HR. Love that name.
Thank you. We started 4 years ago as a consulting business, and my business partner, Stephanie Allweiss, and I both have backgrounds in labor law. So we decided to go in a different direction, quit practicing law, and reach out to the smaller and mid-sized companies that didn't have in-house professional HR people. So we found that those were the ones in our law practice that would come to us only when they were in crisis because they didn't have the problem solvers on board. So typically that function would fall to the business owner or to the office administrator or to the office manager, and none of them really had the expertise to deal with those day-to-day situations.
So does Got You Covered only do preemptive measures, tell them how to put it in a handbook and what the policies are, or do you actually represent them later on in cases? I'm sure you're called in for the cases if they ever go to court.
No, when it gets to that point, we defer to an attorney such as Sydney. Mm-hmm. We only do the core HR process. So we'll help them with their employee handbook. We'll help them with all their processes, setting up their program. And we do a lot of training. In fact, this mm-hmm. week we've been doing a little bit of training on sexual harassment. Our phones have been busy.
I would think so.
So we're scheduling some training sessions now with some of our larger companies.
How do those training sessions go? Is it role-playing? Do you actually, you know, have people interact and give scenarios of what could happen in an
office?
Yes,
we definitely use a lot of hypotheticals, mm-hmm. which are very educational, very informative, and we just, you know, try to teach people on how to properly behave in the workplace.
And Sydney, the cases, I guess, get referred to you when it comes time for representation. How prevalent are these cases now? Is it a growing problem? Are we seeing more of it? And how many of them actually go to court, and how many others have just been settled outside of that?
Well, you know, actually, I've seen a decrease in harassment cases. You know, it was 1987 when the Supreme Court recognize harassment as a form of discrimination. And in the 80s and the 90s, we had a lot of them. But as employers instituted policies and implemented training and basically set it up where, per the Supreme Court directive, you know, if they had a complaint brought to them, they took proper remedial action, they discharged their legal obligation. So you've seen a lot more employers do the obvious and put the policies in place, conduct the training, and act quickly when they see or are told of a complaint of sex harassment, and it takes care of it, where you didn't see that in the early part of the law. So honestly, we still get harassment complaints. Usually it's in the form of an EEOC charge, which is you have to file before a federal lawsuit. But in my experience, they've been on the decline. The problem is retaliation. We see more retaliation claims because what happens is someone makes a complaint, we take care of it, But then there's under the surface this simmering resentment from a manager or a supervisor who's looking to get rid of the individual that complained. And for the labor attorneys in my group, that's one of the biggest problems, because they may have stopped the harassment or the discrimination, but the retaliation may go unchecked. And my advice to employers is, if you know, sex harassment's a one warning offense. You tell a supervisor whatever it is to stop doing it, you're going to just tell them one time. They do it again, they're gone. And if they value the job, they won't do it anymore. But in the same breath, you've got to tell them, you better act like this never happened. You better, you so much as look at that individual who complained the wrong way, and you're going to lose your job. That's the most important thing. And that's, you know, some of the problems you see in these situations that arise, a concern of complaining, a concern of retaliation, and a company from the top down just has to make sure everyone understands that isn't going to happen.
To avoid even getting to that point where one employee has to tell a supervisor or another employee, I don't like that, stop it, and then they get talked to by HR or someone, a supervisor, it's such a gray area. You know, there's descriptions of what is pornography and what is art, and people say, well, I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it. What is this gray area with sexual harassment? I think it's even more vague as far as what constituted. Is there a legal description that a judge or a jury and someone making the determination a case can apply?
Yeah, and there's a big difference between bad decisions, bad judgment, and unlawful harassment that rises to the level of liability. It's the harassment has to be severe and pervasive such that it alters, adversely affects a reasonable person in their employment. To the extent it gets to that level, there may be monetary liability. But a lot of these cases, you do see bad judgment, you see bad comments, poor conduct, but it didn't quite rise to the level of unlawful harassment. But I tell supervisors there's good news and bad news. The good news may be that, hey, the few things you did might not be recognized as unlawful harassment by the court, but they're definitely a violation of the company's anti-harassment policy, and the company has a right to fire you for one bad joke. So abide by the policy if you value your job.
All right, if you've got any questions or if you've got a story you'd like to relate of perceived or actual sexual harassment in your company or in your job, we'd love to hear from you at 504-260-1870. Also, if you want to text, we're getting some text comments in, 870-870. Please remember to text responsibly, no texting and driving. Sydney Lewis and Patricia Pinnell are our guests, and we're talking about sexual harassment on the workplace. What is it legally? How do you avoid it to keep out of court and also to make things work much smoother on the job? We'll be right back. I'm Don Dubuque in for Newell Norman, and you're listening to it on the Big 870 WWL. And welcome back in. We're having a very good discussion with a couple of experts. Patricia Pinnell of Got You Covered HR Consulting Firm and Sydney Lewis of the Jones Walker Law Firm specializing in labor law about sexual harassment on the job. What constituted? What is it legally? How do you avoid it is a big part of it. And let me get to some of these texts. This one says a problem just as big is a woman claiming sexual harassment just to get their boss, coworker fired. Seen any cases like that?
You know, it's one of
how do you avoid that, Patricia, from what you're advising people to do? How would they avoid that from happening?
The only thing that they can really do is there has to be training. Your supervisors and managers need to understand what is appropriate in the workplace. And if they get a complaint, then that has to be promptly investigated. And, you know, the parties may need to be separated while the investigation is ongoing until they can get to the bottom of what's really going on. It's a difficult situation, and it really is sort of a case-by-case situation to try to address.
So we've got cases of actual harassment taking place, but then again, we've got fake harassment taking place for other reasons. All right, we got some more texts coming in. This one says, we had a situation where the guys and gals in our office were always kidding around with no issue. Then one day, one of the ladies got angry at one of the guys because he confronted her about not getting her work done on time. She went to HR and got the mail written up for inappropriate joking from the week before. Totally one-sided. Is this a one-sided case, Sydney?
Well, you see it a lot. Like we were just talking about it. You'll get EEOC charges and you're investigated, and the complaint came up when there was some issues that the complainer did not like. But no matter what, if someone's complaining and they're in good faith in their complaint, it doesn't matter that 10 people think a joke's funny. If one person in that office doesn't think it's funny, it should stop. And you need to tell the individual and cover yourself by writing up the person that, hey, look, this person was offended by this comment. Don't say it again. And depending on the severity of the conduct, harassment is basically a one warning, final warning offense. You know, I know you think it's funny. I know other people think it's funny. This person doesn't. So don't do it again. And continued engagement in that conduct really is a form of insubordination.
All right, here's one asking about the statute of limitations on sexual harassment. Maybe some people are thinking now that they're hearing this, can I go back and bring this up?
Right. There are two avenues. You have to file an EEOC charge to proceed with a suit in federal court to file suit under Title VII, the Civil Rights Act. And let me say this. We're talking about sex harassment, but one of the first things I do when I look at a handbook is look at their harassment policy. It's rarer now, but you'll find a handbook that just has a sex harassment policy. You need a complete anti-harassment policy. You need a policy that addresses harassment on the basis of race, age, national origin, religion, gender. Cover everything. You can't just concentrate on sex harassment. But any kind of harassment or discrimination, you have to file an EEOC charge with the EEOC here downtown. And because we're a deferral state, you have 300 days from the last act that occurred to file that charge. EEOC investigates. It could take a while. Then you have 90 days after the EEOC issues whatever. They either dismiss it or they issue a cause finding or a notice to sue. You have 90 days to file suit in federal court. In state court, you don't have an administrative prerequisite. You could go to state court within a year of the alleged event, and you get additional time up to 6 months if you had an EEOC charge pending.
And if I could just add to that, because a lot of my clients are small businesses, and so the federal EEO laws don't apply to companies that have fewer than 15 employees. So a lot of my clients are, oh, well, then I get a green light. I don't have to worry about this. Well, no, you do have to worry about this, because just because you don't get prosecuted under the law doesn't mean that it's not that it's right. You know, you still have to patrol your workplace. You still have to treat your employees with dignity and respect. And you want to make sure that your workplace is somewhere where people feel safe when they come to work every day.
This kind of begs the question to protect both the potential employer and the employee. Can this be discussed in a job interview? If someone has made a prior EEOC complaint or a sexual harassment, it can't even be brought up and discussed.
It's unlawful retaliation on both ends. It's unlawful retaliation for an employer to try to find out if an employee has filed an EEOC charge or even made any kind of good faith complaint protected under federal law. You can't refuse to hire someone because they filed a charge or otherwise made a complaint. That was their federally protected right. It's unlawful to refuse to hire them. On the back end now, it's unlawful, and I actually have a case right now where it's alleged that a bad reference was given after an employee left because she filed an EEOC charge against the employer. So they badmouthed her to a prospective employer and allegedly prevented her from getting a job. You cannot retaliate like that on either side, nor during, you know, like I said earlier, the hardest thing is, or the most important thing is to make sure there's absolutely no retaliation if someone raises a complaint at any time.
All right, let's get Rick in. He's got a comment on line one. Rick in Metairie, thanks for your call, Rick.
Yes, I was an employee of a large company back in the 80s, and before they instituted their sexual harassment policy, I was probably the biggest offender, and they wanted someone to go to the EEOC and attend a class, and they chose me and sent me back to my office and give a presentation. And ever since then, I've been not an offender.
So you were admittedly guilty of it, and then when you went and heard the EEOC's presentation, you decided how to behave, I guess.
I liked my job. I didn't want to get fired. Prior to that, it was just kind of tolerated. Everybody just kind of laughed it off. But when the company wanted to institute the policy, I had to stop.
Got it. Rick, thanks for the call. We got to take a break here. We got the CBS News update coming up, and that'll be followed by local news, and we'll be back to continue this conversation. If you've had an incident that you want to know would be considered sexual harassment, we got a couple of experts here, Patricia Pinnell and Sydney Lewis. Give us a call at 504-260-1870 or send us a text. We'll be happy to share it with our audience on the air. You can do that at 870-870. And we'll be right back after this CBS News update, followed by the WWL local news. And welcome back in. We're having a discussion about sexual harassment in the workplace. What is it? How is it defined? How you can prevent it? Patricia Pinnell is in that business with Got You Covered HR consulting firm, and Sydney Lewis on the legal end, specializing in labor law with Jones Walker Law Firm. And getting back to our text messages that are coming in, this one says, flirting is harassment. Inappropriate humor is harassment. Unwanted touching is harassment. Discussing pornography subject is harassment. Treat your employees with the same respect you would like. Common sense and the golden rule should prevail in the workplace and public. It's not that easy. This text are trying to define it black and white, but there's going to be a lot of gray in there.
Yeah, there is. And that commenter made an excellent point. You know, I think part of the problem is that we have sort of a breakdown in social mores. You know, walk out of a Saints game on any given Sunday and walk down the street, especially if we've just played Atlanta, and you hear the language that's used out there, and there's no filter. I mean, people don't even look around to see if they're small children or, you know, their grandmother is there. And I think that's part of the problem is, like, you just need to, when you're at work, you have to deal with your coworkers with, you know, respect, again, respect and dignity. Those are the words of the day. You know, if you're not going to say something like that around your family, you shouldn't say that around your coworkers.
Good advice. Very good advice. All right, here's one that says, can sexual harassment be committed off the job by text and phone pictures?
Yes, absolutely. And I've had a few, I had one not too long ago where supervisors were off-site in a bar, and they got drunk, and a male inappropriately touched a female supervisor, and they were on their own time, and she came in the next day and told the HR manager. She was very upset. He came in a little while later, and he kind of had the attitude of, hey, what I do on my time's my own business, and we said, not really, you're terminated. Any off-duty conduct that has ramifications in the workplace can be acted on by the employer, resulting in discipline up to termination.
All right, we've got more text coming in. This one says, the comment was made that you cannot speak badly of an employee after being fired to a future employee. So does that mean that they have to lie to every future employee after they fire someone?
No, Louisiana has a statute that protects employers in giving references as long as you're in good faith and you're factual. What you can't do is let a prospective employer know that someone made a civil rights complaint or filed a charge for the purposes of harming that individual and getting the job. And if a client asks me, hey, can I tell them about this EEOC charge? I would say absolutely not. Don't do it. In fact, you know, most employers give neutral employment references because they don't want to get sued for defamation or a civil rights violation, and they just give name, rank, and serial number and confirm that the individual was employed.
Another question about regular harassment, not sexual. I've been followed and threats in my face, told the manager, and all she did was talk to her. Same parameters on regular harassment as sexual?
Harassment sometimes is used when it doesn't apply. There's harassment that's a violation of the policy. There's harassment that's actually unlawful, but there are personality conflicts as well. And a lot of times when I'm helping clients, I'm dealing with personality conflicts between employees or between managers or between managers and employees, and that's all it is. It doesn't get into discrimination or harassment unless the conduct, the complaint of conduct, is based on a person's race, age, gender, national origin, religion. if it is based on that, if someone is picking on someone because of their age, over 40, or race, or religion, or gender, then that is unlawful. It's a violation of the policy. It's potentially unlawful to the point of monetary liability, depending on how serious it is and how it affects the employee.
All right, we need to take a break here. I got a couple more very interesting text questions about scenarios at workplaces. And Patricia, before we get away from here, I want you to definitely point out steps businesses should take, because I know a lot of people are walking on eggshells right now. And as you said, your phone's been ringing because people are considering putting in policies if they don't have them, instituting handbook policies, and also maybe having some training classes for their employees. We'll be right back after this. All right, thank you for all of the text messages. We'll try to get to yours before we go off the air if we can, but I want to get to our callers first. We have John on a cell phone who wants to talk about sexual harassment with our guest. John, thanks for your call.
Hey, good morning. I guess it's the main topic of discussion in all media right now with sexual harassment. And
it's up there.
It's up there, but I would like to know from these people that are on the panel, you know, when you're innocent, or thank God I've been in business a long time and never had any type of situations that have arisen. But you know, I'm looking at people who have been maybe falsely accused of having sexual advances and for other reasons besides, you know, the woman or the man even might just have made a mistake and decided, well, to cover my mistake, I'm going to falsely accuse someone. But the minute he's accused, or the minute that person's accused, they're guilty, and they're automatically put on the defensive. So how does someone that's falsely accused, where are their avenues to get back their dignity and to get back their worth in business?
Their reputation. Very good question, John. Sydney, why don't you take that one?
Well, you have a lot of situations where if there's no corroboration, and you always hope there's corroboration, but someone makes a complaint, and it's her word versus his. And you know, a lot of times they'll say, oh, I said it, I didn't mean it, I was just joking, you know, I wasn't being serious. But then a lot of times they'll be vehement. They'll say, absolutely not, I never said it. That is a complete lie. And unless you can terminate someone for making a complaint, if you find the smoking gun and have clear evidence they're fabricating it. And with texts and emails and social media, Facebook, sometimes that's easier to find. But otherwise, if they're each standing their ground, it's somewhat of a dilemma. And for supervisors who are accused, you kind of just got to tell the supervisor, look, this is the part of doing your job that's it's a tough part. She's made the complaint, you're denying it. We're telling you that if you make any comment like this going forward, it's going to cost you your job. So, hey, let's let bygones be bygones. Calm down. Just act like this didn't happen. Continue to supervise, and everything will be fine. But we're duty-bound to talk to you as a supervisor to see that this stops, or as an employee to see that if this was happening, it doesn't happen anymore, and you've just got to take it and roll with it and not let it burn you up.
Patricia?
I just want to add to that. I had a client who had a situation similar to that. They had a complaint of sexual harassment, a small office, and it was two equal level managers who were, one complaint was filed and then another complaint was filed. So basically accusing each other, sexually harassing each other. So this company brought us in and asked us to go over to this office. It was over in the Houston area. And we interviewed every single person in that workplace. And at the end of the day, a story starts coming together and you kind of see that this was not a sexually harassing situation. It was just two people who had personality conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very, very important for companies to understand not to have a knee-jerk reaction if they get a complaint. And for supervisors as well, if you're accused of sexual harassment, don't panic, but approach it in a calm way and make sure you get all the facts. Do a thorough investigation before you start making decisions.
Sydney, we got to get to a break, but quickly, part of John's question was, how does that reputation get restored? Don Dubuque and a girl meet on FarmersOnly.com. She's claiming I'm sending her sexually explicit pictures or something like that, and this makes the news, but none of it was true. The news is not going to pick that up and say, oh, Don was exonerated of that. He didn't do any of that.
Right. I've had a couple cases that made the news and the TV paper, and they sounded pretty horrible because they were reporting right from the complaint. And both these cases got dismissed on summary judgment because there was another side of the story that completely gave a different light to the allegations.
That person seek damages against the accuser?
Usually not. If that individual in good faith felt that the something bad had happened to her, they're allowed to bring the complaint. However, you rule 11 in federal court, you have a mechanism if a court, a jury, or the judge feels that it was clearly a frivolous complaint, the plaintiff could be liable for all attorney's fees. Mm-hmm. And you see that. The EEOC has been hit with attorney's fees of $250,000, $500,000 lately in the past few years because they brought complaints of harassment, discrimination that the judge felt was completely frivolous.
In some cases, it could be loss of business revenue that could amount to a considerable amount. So it's something to consider. All right, we've got to take one last break. Donnie in reserve, we get to your call and we come back. And Patricia, I still would like you to give a quick overview and maybe refer people to you if they want to establish a policy and get a handbook. We'll be right back to do it after this. Donnie, I'm sorry we're not going to get to hear your very interesting sexual harassment case, but Patricia, you just got a minute or so. Tell us what people can do if they're a business owner and they want to contact you about setting up a policy and handbook.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's very important to set up that policy. Regardless of the number of employees that you have, you've got to have your policies together and address the situation. I'm happy to talk to anybody. It's www.gotchacoveredhr.com.
Can't miss that. Got you covered, consulting firm. Also, we have Jones Walker Law Firm. If somebody needs representation, Sydney, I sound like you're the right guy for them.
Sure.
All right, we're going to be back next hour. We're going to talk about why they are not releasing the documents related to the JFK assassination. For the life of me, I can't figure out why 50 years later someone would be embarrassed and how national security could be compromised. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news on the Big 870 WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.